Welcome to the Dennis Colazzo Show. Leading off, as always, my number one guest, Luke Jones, doing great things for Baltimore Positive, WNST 1570 AM. Luke, I've been watching the Ravens winning ways. We have a World Series now under our belt, a new champ, and even saw some AEW the other night in honor of you.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on. I honestly haven't been able to watch too much wrestling of late. Been busy with the baseball playoffs and certainly with the Ravens. But it's good to talk to you. It's been a couple weeks, so great to be getting a chance to catch up with you now.
Yeah, great to have you. You know, I'm not a great baseball fan by any stretch. In fact, I quickly lost interest once our Baltimore Orioles were knocked out. And I'm not in a camp that, well, you know, at least we lost for the champs. I go back to 06 when the Ravens lost to the Colts, and I certainly was not rooting for Peyton Manning to win the Super Bowl. Thought we had the better team that year, and had we gotten past them, I think the Colts beat the Bears that year in the Super Bowl. Not a very good Bears team, but we had the inside track in 06 and home field advantage and didn't cash it in. So I don't know how you feel about the Texans. I mean, give them credit. Credit's due. They got hot, right? And at the end, they proved they were the best team this past season.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to give the Texas Rangers a lot of credit. And I don't know how much Orioles fans take solace in it or not. It's baseball. I mean, we've talked about this a lot. We talked about this even going back to before the division series started, the 5 days off and how unbaseball like that was. And yeah, so much of this still just comes back to baseball's a high variant sport day to day. There are a lot of situations and scenarios where the better team loses. You know, go look at the course of a full season and see how many bad teams beat good teams in the course of a 3 or 4 game series. So why should we expect that to be any different in October? But so that partially explains why we saw the Arizona Diamondbacks at 84 wins get to the World Series. It's a product of an expanded postseason. You let more teams in, you're going to see more upsets and you're going to see lesser teams be able to go farther because baseball is just, that's the nature of the sport. But in the case of the Rangers, you know, even before the division series started, I know you and I talked about this, and I talked about their offense. I talked about the fact that at different times over the course of a 162 game season, I did wonder if they were the best team in the American League. So you have to give them credit, especially with the way they played on the road in the postseason. I mean, just remarkable to do what they did away from their home ballpark. And, you know, especially coming back, being down against the Astros in the ALCS. I mean, so they deserve it. You know, I don't know. I didn't really have much of a rooting interest one way or the other in watching the World Series. I was hoping to see a little bit more of a competitive series. But to me, you know, of those two teams, the Rangers were the far superior team. And I think as it played out and as fun as and as admirable as the Diamondbacks run was, the reality was they were an okay team this year. They played really well at times. They've certainly come a long way, but it felt as though, you know, maybe their magic kind of ran out after they were able to knock off the Phillies, you know, winning the last two in Philadelphia, and just didn't seem like they had a whole lot left in the tank after that. And give the Rangers credit. And I will say this, just in a general sense, you know, I think it is a good thing when you have a team, a fan base that's never won a World Series, as was the case with the Texas Rangers, who've been around a long time, mind you. I do think that's good for the sport. So if it wasn't going to be the Orioles, you know, I'm certainly okay with it being the Rangers. And yeah, I mean, some people will take some, you know, some kind of a, you know, solace or something like that in the fact that it was the eventual world champs that knocked off the Orioles. But I think baseball fans would just tell you it just makes them that much more excited to get to spring training. But yeah, we got a few months to go for that. So in the meantime, we'll be watching the Ravens and continuing to see what they can do.
That we will do, Luke. When I came over from Greece back in 73, I was really only familiar with soccer as a sport. And of course I tried everything that the U.S. had to offer. And to this day, to me, the hardest thing is in sports is to be able to hit a baseball. I mean, you're talking about a small object coming at you 95, 100 miles an hour. And I give a lot of credit to those major leaguers in terms of what they can do with the bat, because that is a very, very – I was so frustrated. I played, I think, one season and went back to playing football, basketball, and lacrosse, and anything but baseball, right? I mean, I enjoyed playing some softball here and there, but even softball, I struggle slow pitch, so – we'll leave that one right there.
Yeah, I mean it's what they do is incredible. I mean Corey Seager, World Series MVP. I mean you see what he did. You said what before the injury, Adolis Garcia, what he was doing. I mean, but I agree with you, and I think it's become even more pronounced now when you consider what pitchers do. And look, this isn't it to get into a debate that the game's better now than it was in the past or anything like that, but just the sheer facts that guys are throwing harder than ever. The breaking stuff, from pitcher to pitcher is more wicked than it was in the past. I mean, now guys don't have the same longevity, and you don't have guys throwing complete games and whatnot. So again, I don't want to diminish that, but boy, it is challenging. And it's what's amazing. You'll see a team that's, look at the Phillies, for example, how the way they hit the ball, and the way they look like they were just a freight train heading toward the World Series after they, especially after they had beaten Atlanta. They take the early lead against the Diamondbacks, and then their bats just stopped. They went quiet, and that's the nature of the game. It really is. I mean, you go through the peaks and valleys, especially over a full season, but even in the postseason. So yeah, give the Rangers credit. I mean, that lineup, they got the job done, and they did it in convincing fashion. And even as they closed it out in game five, they were able to put an exclamation point in the ninth inning to really make it clear that they were going to leave no doubt that they were world champions, and they were going to put that thing away in Arizona.
No doubt about that, Luke. Let's segue to the Baltimore Ravens. We haven't talked about them in a while. And although people, I guess, weren't really thrilled about how they won in Arizona, I did read somewhere where the Ravens have traveled like over 13,000 miles the last few weeks. And I was across the pond when they were playing the Titans, and I know that the effects that travel had on my body. And I can't imagine having practices and weight training and nursing injuries and whatnot. So the fact that they keep winning through all that, I think, has been very encouraging for this team this year.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. As much as, just a few weeks ago, you and I were talking about how discouraging it was to see this team struggle to finish football games, specifically Indianapolis and Pittsburgh, and, especially that Pittsburgh loss, it just ugly, considering how inept Pittsburgh looked for a large portion of that game. But I think you do have to look at what's transpired since then. The long trip to London, as you mentioned. It wasn't a perfect performance against Tennessee. I mean, the red zone woes were there, no question about it. But they come home from that. They absolutely blow the doors off the Detroit Lions, who, bounced back pretty nicely this past week. And certainly not a team that, okay, maybe they weren't ready to be anointed the best team in football, but I think that's still a good team. So you look at how they won that football game, you have to be impressed. And then to go out to the desert, it was weird. And as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, it's one of those games that if you didn't watch it, you look at the final score, it really didn't give you an indication of how that game played out at all. I mean, it was really
No.
the defense leading the way and the offense not being very good, quite frankly. But as the game went on and they got to the fourth quarter, the Ravens kind of went back to that tendency of, I don't know, playing down to their competition, playing with their food, as some people will describe it. But not finishing emphatically the way that you would like, to the point where it's almost like they were daring Arizona to pull off a miraculous comeback. So you'd rather not see that. But in the big picture sense, what you just laid out there, considering they're 6-2 with a stretch of four of the last five being on the road, and they went 4-1 over that stretch. I mean, you will gladly take that. Any day of the week, if you talk to John Harbaugh before the season started, forgetting about injuries, anything like that, just looking at the schedule, the amount of travel as you laid out, and you told him you can sign up right now to be 6-2, he would have gladly done that. There's no question about it, regardless of which games they won and lost. So I think from that standpoint, they're in a good spot now. They've got three straight games at home. They don't get on a plane again until after Thanksgiving. Now, this is not an easy three-game stretch for various reasons, starting with Seattle coming to town on Sunday, and a Seahawks team that I think is a little better than a lot of people thought they might be, even if maybe Geno Smith's not playing at the level that he did last year. But this is a big opportunity for them, and I think if there's one thing that I'd like to see over these next three games, and understanding that two of them are against division opponents, including the big Thursday night game against the Bengals in 2 weeks. But you know, how about reassert your home field advantage a little bit more? And they did that against Detroit, but continue that just because, you know, we've talked about the last couple of years where, you know, they've had some losses at home where you'd kind of scratch your head and say, you know, that doesn't feel Ravens like to lose that game. You know, certainly the overtime loss against Indianapolis earlier this year. So, you know, you got a chance to unpack your suitcase and put it away. You got a chance to play at home 3 straight weeks. Take advantage of this. You know, you can really put yourself in a position where you can not just maintain first place in the AFC North, but since you're playing the Browns and you're playing the Bengals, you got a chance to really seize control of the division. And not just that, but we know that they're going into week 9. There's a 4-way tie for the best record in the AFC. So a chance to keep yourself in great position to try to earn that number one seed overall. So, you know, I think you feel good about this football team. You know, I'm sure we can touch on the trade deadline in a couple moments if you'd like, but you know, I think they're in a really good spot, and that doesn't mean they're perfect, but who is, you know, I mean, did you see how the Chiefs played in Denver this past Sunday? Buffalo has been up and down, although I certainly liked the acquisition of Rasul Douglas for them, you know, to kind of fortify their secondary, but they've had their issues and inconsistency. Cincinnati's come back from the dead, but we saw how the Bengals looked earlier this year. You know, Jacksonville, I think, is up and coming, but, you know, you still don't fully trust them as a young team just yet. So Miami, you love the offense. What about the rest of the team? You know, there's still questions there. So, you know, all those teams, there are question marks. So, yeah, the Ravens have some question marks, no question about it, but they're no different than anyone else in that category. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, the path to the Super Bowl through the AFC is going to go through Kansas City, whether the Chiefs end up having home field advantage or not. They're the team that you have to be prepared to knock off. But, you know, that's everyone's saying that right now, including Cincinnati, you know, who, yeah, they did it a couple years ago, but they didn't get to the top of the mountain and win it all. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, you feel really good about where the Ravens are. And, you know, to your point, with all that travel that they did, being able to handle that with the record being what it is now, and also their health being where it is now, and you knock on wood, cross your fingers, say a prayer, whatever you want to do, they're in a pretty good spot in that regard. And you can't ask for the health to be much better than it is right now, which, you know, other than J.K. Dobbins, you know, they've got, you know, they've got some other guys banged up, and but guys that are all going to return at some point in time. So, you know, I like where this football team is right now. And, you know, it doesn't mean it's perfect. Doesn't mean that there aren't improvements they need to make or consistency that they need to find, you know, on a higher level, specifically on the offensive side of the football. But I think, you know, you look at a 6-2 record after the schedule that they've had in terms of the travel. How can you not be pleased with it? How can you not be encouraged with where this team is going moving forward?
What I liked in the Arizona game, Luke, was the second half adjustments. In the first half, it was clear Arizona, they were dropping back as many as 8 players trying to muddle up the passing game for Lamar Jackson and company. But they came out running in the second half, featuring Gus Edwards. They ran well between the tackles. So, yeah, if you're going to just come out with three down linemen and 8 guys on the back end, I thought it was a really good adjustment by Todd Monken and company.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you'd like to see them adjust a little more quickly. And even Lamar Jackson, who, let's face it, Dennis, we know that Jackson's not someone who will go out of his way to say they should be running more, because Lamar loves to throw the football. So for him to say what he said after the game, yeah, I did think it was a little telling. And maybe they were a little slow to adjust, but they did it. And look, it's the NFL. It's a week-to-week league. It's very matchup driven. That's really what week-to-week means. I mean, it comes down to matchups. Sure. Would I have liked to have seen this team be more successful throwing the football against one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL? No question. I mean, they're still chasing consistency, specifically with throwing the football and even with their running game. That's not just Lamar Jackson scrambles, which obviously we didn't see very many of at all this past week. But yeah, I mean, you have to be ready to adjust. The one thing, you know, Greg Roman talked about this. Todd Monken is encountering this right now. You know, it very much is it's an offense that teams are going to try to throw the kitchen sink at you, because it is unique. And when you have a quarterback as unique as Lamar Jackson, you're going to see teams try different things, you know, and Kansas City encounters the same kind of thing. And you know what, when you're a top team or a team aspiring to be that, you're going to have teams that are going to try some different things with you. So, you know, from that standpoint, it was good to see them finally adjust. You know, for me, not even so much the scheme or the approach. I just liked seeing Gus Edwards look, you know, pretty explosive. And, you know, the last couple of weeks, remember he had the long catch and run against Detroit. You know, he wasn't looking that way earlier in the season. And especially now with the trade deadline having passed and them not upgrading at the running back position, to me, it was good to see Gus Edwards do what he did individually. You know, it's not a Pro Bowl running back, but certainly someone who has been really successful. I mean, prior to this season, it averaged 5+ yards per carry in each of his healthy seasons in the NFL. So we know he's capable of doing it. So for me, even more so than the scheme or the adjustment, just seeing Gus Edwards be explosive, break tackles, do what he did, obviously find the end zone multiple times. That's always nice for him and anyone who has him in fantasy football. But I think, you know, for me, that was the biggest thing that I like seeing, that, you know, okay, they could adjust, and certainly they were able to open up things a little bit with their running game as the second half went on. But just good seeing Gus Edwards do that, because earlier in the year, you know, I was a little more concerned seeing him, you know, kind of, okay, if you block for 3 or 4, you're kind of getting 3 or 4, and that's all you were getting. So it was nice to see him these last couple weeks show a little more explosiveness. You know, the physicality's always been there, you know that. But for him, you know, if he can make a few more people miss, it just makes the running game that much more dangerous.
Well, I have Gus Edwards on my fantasy football team. Unfortunately, I had him on the bench, so him and his 29 points, and I lost by 2 points. So I left him and his 29 points on the bench, which happens, and unfortunately, it happened to me this past week. But that aside, that ACL injury he suffered, it usually does take over a year, 1.5 years, sometimes 2, for the player to fully come back. And hopefully, we're seeing shade of that with Gus Edwards. In regards to the trade deadline, although we want to stay in the moment and savor the journey, the ride, we still have to keep an eye out on next season, and you can't mortgage your future. You can't give away prime draft picks, especially for short-term rentals. So I do think that Eric DaCosta and company had a balanced what do you give up versus what are you going to get, and how much better do you make your team as a result thereof.
Yeah, I mean, and that, you're always considering that. And I mean, I think the reality is Eric DaCosta, whether you've liked moves or haven't liked moves, whether you've agreed with something, disagreed with something, I mean, he's certainly shown a propensity to be willing to make a move at the trade deadline. You know, we saw that with Marcus Williams. We saw that with Yannick Ngakoue. That didn't work out as well. Certainly we saw it with Roquan Smith, which worked out beautifully. So, you know, he was kind of 2 for 3 in that regard, and, you know, didn't make a move in 21, which probably worked out for the best considering Lamar Jackson got hurt. And, you know, there even with a healthy Lamar Jackson, I think there was debate how far that team was going to be able to go. And Steve Bisciotti acknowledged as much 2 off-seasons ago. But, you know, I think you can only make the moves that are presented. And first of all, I don't think there were that many players that were moved at the trade deadline, guys that were actually traded where you would say, wow, the Ravens really could have used that guy. Okay, oh, here, Montez Sweat, you know, good player, but look at what the Bears gave up to acquire him. If the Ravens were going to beat that offer, you're going to give up a first-round pick? I mean, that's what it would have been. I mean, you know, say what you want, whether the Bears were wise or not in doing that. I mean, certainly a head-scratching kind of move. I guess they're hoping they're just going to be able to sell him on a – you know, staying there and signing a long-term deal. And if they do, then great. You know, in that way, it's not, I guess it's not 100% different than what the Ravens did with Roquan Smith a year ago, but still that's a lot to give up, especially for a team that has a long way to go compared to the Ravens last year. You know, I think you can look at Chase Young, you know, will I hear that the Ravens could have made the offer that San Francisco did, and, you know, a little bit better of a third round pick? Sure. But the question is, would the Commanders, you know, did they, you know, were they willing to do that? Were they willing to trade him to a team that's 35 miles away from where they are? You know, is there a little bit of that at work here in the same way that people will talk about the Yankees and the Red Sox, whether they'll do business, right? So, you know, but I think of the rest, you know, I mentioned Rasul Douglas, you know, being dealt to Buffalo. I think that was a really nice trade for the Bills, but I think the reality is, I think the Ravens' cornerback depth is as good as it's going to be right now. Now, two injuries later, then we're going to be talking about that. But guess what? That's every team in the league right now. So, I don't think you're planning. You can't plan for multiple injuries. You can plan for an injury, maybe two. You get more than that, you're in trouble. And every team in the league is that way. So I feel like their depth at corner was good. Wide receiver, I saw some people mention this, and look, has the Odell Beckham deal worked out to this point? No, it hasn't. I mean, that's and people viewed it as an overpay at the time he signed, and it's hard to look at that and say that it's trending in the right direction. But who are you going to acquire at wide receiver? As far as the guys that, I mean, you're talking about bit players. You weren't talking about anyone that's moving the needle. So really, it just does come back to running back for me. Other than that potential Chase Young trade, which I just mentioned, and no one got moved. I mean, it just comes down to this. I mean, Josh Jacobs, now you see what happened with the Raiders and the aftermath of that. So were they even taking calls? Was there anything even going on there with a general manager and a head coach who were about to be fired? Derrick Henry, I mean, there's been a lot of chatter and whatnot there as far as ownership and whether they ultimately wanted to, were they were going to move Derrick Henry. I mean, if you're the Titans, you're seeing what Levis did, and you might be saying, hey, we're still in this thing, and he's a player who's meant that much to them. So, you look at those two, Saquon Barkley, the face of the Giants. I mean, I thought, was there the potential to get someone like a Zach Moss, someone that might be, certainly not a big splash, but might have added a little more diversity to their running back group that they currently have. But it just didn't happen. And you didn't see those big names moved. It'd be one thing if Kansas City went and got Saquon Barkley, you know what I mean? And then you say, okay, well, what's this going to look like? It's one thing to talk about Kansas City if they had gotten DeAndre Hopkins, for example, but you really look at the contenders in the AFC, like I said, other than Buffalo fortifying their cornerback spot, and Douglas isn't a three-time All-Pro cornerback. He's a solid corner who's going to help them, but you look at the contenders, it's not as though there were an abundance of moves made. I mean, San Francisco adding Chase Young to that front, yeah, that's impressive. But you're not worrying about the 49ers until Christmas night, and in a bigger picture sense, to the Super Bowl potentially. So I
Well,
think from that standpoint,
the other piece, Lou, not to cut you off, the other piece about Chase Young is he's great when he's healthy. And in contrast to Roquan
right.
Smith, who was a healthy player for 5 years for the Bears, you're still taking a chance at a guy who hasn't been available for the bulk of his career.
Yeah. Oh, no question about it. I mean, and that's where I kind of look at those two deals. It was interesting to me. Like, to me, Sweat is the player. Okay, he doesn't have the upside that Chase Young showed before the ACL injury, but he's the guy that you kind of know what you're getting. Whereas with Chase Young, it's like, okay, what is he exactly? And not to say that he's not playing well this year. I'm not suggesting that, but okay, what exactly are you getting? And then if you're giving up a draft pick, if you're signing that him, what exactly are you signing there? So, I think it comes down to it. Were there moves that they were in on potentially making? Were they having talks with teams? Of course they were. But at the same time, you look at the reality of where they are with the salary cap next year, knowing that you now have a $52 million quarterback per year that, it's part of it. It's not to blame Lamar. It's just reality. Every team that has a high-priced quarterback like that, it's different accounting as it pertains to your salary cap. So you've got that to consider. You have the fact that you have guys that you used void years on this past year. So there's going to be a little more dead money that's going to hit the cap. Not an extraordinary amount, but some. And you're just up against it. And you have a lot of pending free agents. I mean, right now, Justin Madubuike, Patrick Queen, Geno Stone, who you now throw into that conversation, Kevin Zeitler. So you definitely have some big time questions. I mean, I just named four just off the top of my head, let alone, talking about, probably not so much a concern about Odell Beckham being a free agent, but point is, they have plenty of pending free agents. They only have so much cap space that they're going to be able to use, and the draft becomes that much more important. We talked about this a ton in 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17. You know, in the post Joe Flacco, post Super Bowl Joe Flacco era, where, you know, the Ravens missed on Matt Elam. They missed on Arthur Brown. They missed on Terrence Brooks. They missed big time on Rashad Perriman. I mean, go down the list of those early picks, those first few years after the Super Bowl. You know, that really put them in a major, not major, but that put them in a bind in terms of not having that young, cheap talent to augment your football team, whether you're talking about offense or defense. So that's where you want as many swings, you want as many lottery tickets, so to speak, as it pertains to the draft as you can get. So, you know, I wasn't opposed to making a trade by any stretch of the imagination. And boy, the idea of Derrick Henry being in the same backfield lining up behind Lamar Jackson and what that could have meant for a running game, or you know, Josh Jacobs or, you know, Saquon Barkley. It didn't sound like the Giants ever had any remote interest whatsoever in trading Saquon. But point is, yeah, the thinking about any of those guys, boy, that would have been a lot of fun. But at the same time, were you going to give up a second round pick for a running back who you're then either going to have to sign to a long-term deal? And I know, Dennis, you and I have talked about that and the merits of whether that's wise to do that, especially with a top-shelf quarterback contract already on the books. Or, and here's the difference between that move and even Roquan Smith, or talking about like a Chase Young or a Montez Sweat or someone like that, is, okay, you don't sign that running back. What comp pick are you going to recoup there? It's not going to be a third round pick because no one's paying running backs to that degree. So you might give up a second, you know, you probably, I don't know for sure, you very well could have gotten Derrick Henry for a second round pick, but if you don't sign him long term, and look, he's going to be 30 years old. I'm not really keen on signing a 30-year-old running back.
No.
As great as his career has been, you're signing him for what he's already done rather than what he's going to do in that scenario. So how much is he going to get on the open market? And then what comp pick is that going to be? You know, you're probably going to, at best, you are maybe going to get a fourth round pick, and that's not even a guarantee. So I think you've got to keep your eyes on the big picture. And as much as Eric DaCosta has picked his spots to be aggressive, at the same time, go back and look at the Orlando Brown trade. Go back and look at the Marquise Brown trade. Those two trades specifically stand out right away as those were not trades that were for winning now. You know, those were long-term deals. I mean, in fact, the Ravens, you know, they short-term, they took a hit at both of those positions when they made those trades, even though especially the Marquise Brown trade with Linderbaum has looked like a home run in the big picture. They still were light at wide receiver last year. You know, so DaCosta has always, you know, tried to maintain that balance between the short term and the long term. And long story short, he didn't see a deal that made sense for them coming together. And they decided to stand pat. And when you're 6-2 and in first place and tied for the best record in the conference, and Kansas City didn't make any big moves, and Miami didn't make any big moves, Cincinnati didn't make any big moves, I think you look at that and say, you know what? We're in a good spot. And John Harbaugh said it, you know, we really like our team. We like our guys. And I think that's the message it delivers to the team to say, hey, you know, we didn't make a trade at the deadline. So, you know, go out there and do what you do. We believe in you. So I think that's how it played out. And I'm okay with that. And ultimately the proof will be in the pudding. And I'll say this, and you know, as I ramble on and on, the biggest factor here is the Ravens need a healthy Lamar Jackson in December and January, and there is not a trade to be made on that market that changes that reality. If we see a repeat of last year or the year before, they could have gotten Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Hopkins, Montez Sweat, and Chase Young. And you know what? If they don't have Lamar, it's not happening for them in January. So that's where, you know, and that kind of sounds like a, you know, that's been a little wishy-washy, but it's the truth. This team always has a chance with a healthy number 8 on the field. So that's where you just hope that continues, because they're in a good spot here moving forward into the second half of the season.
See, and you mentioned all the pending free agents, and not that they're going to be able to sign even one of them, but in the scenario you mentioned where you sign Derrick Henry and maybe you extend him, his best football is behind him. Whereas Justin Madubuike, if they're going to spend money, Justin Madubuike, Patrick Queen, and Geno Stone to a lesser degree because you still have Marcus Williams back there and Kyle Hamilton. But my point is, I'd rather see them invest that money in a defensive lineman with his best football ahead of him, with a young linebacker with his best football ahead of him, rather than a splash signing that doesn't have a a good long-term return.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and not to get too much into it, because you and I talked about this ad nauseum with J.K. Dobbins and everything that happened in the offseason with him. But I mean, I just don't think that's a position that's wise to invest in at this point
I don't
in terms
disagree
of
with
a
you.
free, as far as a free agent contract. Now,
I agree with you there.
I'm absolutely looking at the Ravens to draft a running back in not the first round, but I think the second round is really, that second round pick that you didn't use to trade for a veteran running back. To me, I'm looking at that, and Dennis, you'd be better versed than I am at this point. I mean, I haven't looked at the running backs at all coming out of college this coming year or anticipated, but I think that's where you need to invest. And to me, you get to the end of the rookie contract, and you do exactly what the Giants, the Raiders, what they've done is, if you love your back, you can explore a deal, but even if you can't get a long-term deal done and you still love your back, honestly, and look, the union, they've got a chance to negotiate this and try to get the
They do.
franchise tag out of the picture. If you're a team and that's at your, you have that resource at your disposal, why would you not franchise a running back for another year? I mean, it's just,
Well, not only
I
that,
love
but
running
just
backs.
I do too. But in normal positions too, I'd be very careful as a GM to extend anybody.
Sure.
I'd have to be convinced that it's just not the money. You're not playing for the money. You're playing for a Super Bowl. You're playing for a gold jacket. And when I look at a guy like Roquan Smith, a guy like Lamar Jackson, when they get their bag, and really has no impact on their performance, they're going to show up. And we look at Deshaun Watson, and I'm not saying he's faking an injury, but I mean, the Browns tied up all that money on a guy who had some red flags. And so whether it's a running back, a wide receiver, defensive tackle, I've got to be convinced as a general manager that if I'm going to extend you beyond your rookie contract, you've got to be a dude. And to me, there's just not that many guys that I would trust that they would play their best ball after that pen came off that contract. We saw Terrell Suggs sign three contracts, I believe, with the Ravens, and at least the last two, he took a year off, before he got his act back together again. So I do love players like Roquan, Lamar, that the bag just doesn't change them. That doesn't change their profile, doesn't change their MO. They want to win a Super Bowl. They want that yellow jacket, that gold jacket, and those are the kind of guys that I would extend.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'm just, you mentioned them in passing, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring it up, because I've mentioned it a couple times in writing at BaltimorePositive.com. But think about the 80-20 rule, that the Ravens have long subscribed to, 80% of the production at 20% of the cost. Look at what's playing out right now with Marcus Williams, who they just signed, last offseason to a 5-year, $70 million contract, and yet Geno Stone is leading the league in interceptions right now. Now, I'm not going to sit here, Dennis, and say that I'm so smart that I thought Geno Stone, I expected Geno Stone was going to do this, but we've now seen in the last 6 or 7 years for the Ravens, just at the safety position alone, look at what happened with Tony Jefferson and then Chuck Clark, replacing an injured Tony Jefferson. And at that point in time, Chuck Clark was a better player than Jefferson at their stages in their career. And then look, Marcus Williams had not had these major injury concerns before coming to Baltimore. And I know some people right away will say, well, it's the Ravens, it's their training staff. Oh, I mean, he had a
Wow.
dislocated wrist. That's not really a conditioning, that's not a conditioning injury. That's what he had last year. Now, this year, a pec and a hamstring. All right. If it makes you feel better to say it's all the Ravens' fault and no one should ever get injured, then fine. I'm not going to argue with you, because they have had a lot of injuries in recent years. But the point is, and this kind of lends itself to what I was just, in response to what you just said, at times, this is why it's important to, you want to try to thread the needle, so to speak, between competing for championships and relying on trustworthy veteran players, but also letting and allowing younger guys to develop. Because now you look at this scenario with Geno Stone. I mean, Marcus Williams, Do I think Marcus Williams is a better player than Geno Stone, all things being equal? I think so. Although Geno Stone continues to intercept Pat. I mean, you know, it's looked like Ed Reed back there the first half of the season, which is just remarkable. You know, he already has more interceptions in for a full season than the Ravens have had since Eric Weddle back in like 2016 or 17, I think it was. I mean, that, you know, going back and, oh yeah, they played eight games, you know, so it speaks to how impressive it's been. But now you're in a position where you say, okay, what are you going to do? I would assume, actually, you know what? I retract that. I don't even want to make an assumption at this point. But you're in a position now where Marcus Williams is going to be going into the third year of his contract. Hopefully he finishes the rest of the year healthy. He is back practicing this week. Hopefully he plays really well and he plays the final eight games or nine games and through the postseason, and he's out there, and then we forget about that. Because if he does, then it makes it easier to say, okay, he's still our guy, and Gino, we love you. You're probably going to go make big money elsewhere. But if it's continues to be injuries and on and off the field, you're going to be in a position where you have a Marcus Williams contract that's still not going to be very easy to get out of, so to speak. And you don't want to be in a position where, okay, then Geno Stone walks, and then suddenly he's not there next year, and Marcus Williams, the injuries are continuing for him. So, you know, the point is you want to try to – you want to have a nice balance of veteran players, but also have some room, some flexibility to have your young guys develop. And, I mean, look at how Geno Stone's developed. I mean, this is a guy who was waived multiple times during his rookie year. He was with the Houston Texans, and the Texans didn't even keep him. All they had to do was tender him an exclusive rights tender, which is standard operating procedure for teams with players that are only, you know, in their first or second year. And, you know, that guys that are either undrafted or practice squad type guys. So, you know, it's wild to kind of see where he's been, but it's another reminder, and it kind of lends itself to what you were saying about, you know, these deals. You know, extensions are great, but it's got to be with the right guys, because otherwise, you know, you'll be saying, you know, sometimes the best deal is the one you don't make. And, you know, we know that the Ravens have had plenty of players that they've allowed to walk, and then a year or two later you say, oh, that it's good they didn't re-sign that guy, because it didn't turn out that way. And on the flip side, they've had some of their own that they've re-signed, or free agents that they've signed, where then a year or two later you say, oh, that wasn't so great. So, you know, that's, you know, it's part of it. Every team is going to have some of those regrets, and every team's going to have those woulda, coulda, shouldas. But it definitely, you know, seeing what Geno Stone has done this year is a reminder of, you know, don't give up on players developing. Patrick Queen, another one, you know, certainly as we'll see how this plays out and see what kind of market these guys have and how many of them they can keep, and other guys that'll be moving on and they'll be collecting comp picks for.
No question about it. Luke, always a pleasure having you on. Appreciate your thoughtfulness, insight, and comments. Please tell our listeners where they can find you in Baltimore Positive, all the great things you do, including your blog.
Absolutely. Encourage everyone to follow me at Baltimore Luke on Twitter, X, or Threads, you know, anywhere you can find me at Baltimore Luke. Check out you can follow at WNST on Twitter as well. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. The latest Ravens injury report, I'll have my 12 Ravens thoughts with a prediction, post-game reaction, final injury report. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you'll get the final injury report of the week. You'll get the game day inactives, any significant in-game injury updates. You know, we're not going to send it out if, you know, the backup safety or backup corner has a hamstring and is questionable to return. But if a big name player is injured during the game and we get a meaningful update on their status, we'll send that out to you directly on your mobile device via the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, my friend, you stay well, and I know you'll be at the stadium Sunday covering the Ravens, and it should be a very interesting game against the Seahawks.
It will. We didn't talk about the Seahawks too much, but, you know, I think this is going to be a good football game, and I think, you know, Pete Carroll, watch out. You know, I'm not a betting man, but I saw a couple factoids in regards to them being an underdog and how they tend to do well in those scenarios. So Ravens have to start fast, play well. If they do, I think they'll get the victory.
You got it, my friend. There he goes, Luke Jones, here on 1570 AM, Baltimore Positive, WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.